Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Rick Barbary, who is Group Vice President at Digital River. Rick, thanks for joining me today.
Karen, thanks for having me today.
So we're going to go around the world with you, Rick, and it's going to be a really interesting whirlwind tour of a couple of really interesting geographies that are driving cross-border payments. So do you have your passport with you today?
I have my passport. I am ready.
Excellent. Okay, our first stop is China. So obviously, gigantic market, lots of consumers, lots of smartphones, and a lot of appetite to buy things cross-border, and to do that obviously via the internet. Alipay is obviously the method of payment that many, many Chinese consumers have available to them. I think the recent stats suggest 300 million digital mobile accounts. Merchants must really need to accept Alipay if they want to serve the Chinese consumer. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. There's new stats that are coming out every day, and I think that's a reflection of the very aggressive adoption of Alipay. No doubt, well over a 50% market share, you know, a tremendous volume of transactions around the world, both in China as well as outside of China. And I think what you're seeing is Alipay is, you know, really appeal to the consumer. Safe, trustworthy, convenient, mobile-enabled capability that really does support Chinese shopping.
So that's just one piece of it, though, right? I mean, so payment is one thing, but there must be other things that merchants need to do in order to attract that consumer?
Yeah, absolutely. When I think about the Chinese market, I really kind of put it into two different categories. So if we're talking about how do you as a merchant take most advantage of the Chinese opportunity that's ahead of you, I kind of think about it as two primary categories. One is you've got your Chinese shoppers that are buying from foreign merchants. Mm-hmm. And two is you're selling locally to China. And I think each one of those has some unique characteristics to it.
So tell us, what makes them different and the same?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, let's think about these Chinese shoppers that are buying from foreign merchants, right? You have 90, almost 100 million Chinese people traveling this year. A couple million of those will be in the U.S. You know, who is your Chinese consumer? Nearly 30% of international students that are studying here in the U.S. are Chinese. Hmm. So if you think about the Chinese market, it's not just about in China. It's about servicing these folks who are actually traveling. And what that really, in our opinion, kind of breaks down to is when they're shopping, you want to make their experience as local, familiar, and comfortable as you can. I think Alipay does a fabulous job of that, but look at China UnionPay as a rapidly emerging payment method. 3.5 billion cards, $3.5 trillion in processing a couple of years ago. You know,
wow.
Growth 30, 40 times payment transactions over the past 5, 6, 7 years. UnionPay emerging like crazy. So if you're thinking about servicing this traveling market, you got to be able to make sure you're accepting payment methods that are familiar to them just as they were back home.
I think that's a really good point. It's making the experience local even if the shopper isn't local. I think that's a really good rule of thumb. All right, well, let's fly now to India. So that's our next stop. Really interesting market. Also, you know, an enormous untapped potential, but a very different marketplace, very cash-based, hard to get a credit card. And I know there are some unique phenomena in the market, in the Indian market, where cash on delivery is a big deal. How in the world do merchants serve merchants outside of India, and even merchants inside of India, frankly, serve a consumer base that doesn't have a credit card and likes to pay in cash?
It's difficult. There's no question about it. And I think that's why we see India remaining as top of mind when we talk about our BRIC countries, but the penetration has been a little more slow than, say, the penetration into markets like Brazil, where, in fact, you do have infrastructure that supports what you're talking about. So when we think about commerce, we think about it as truly an end-to-end experience. One of those components is the payment process. But everything else around that commerce experience needs to be there. Everything from local sites to local languages to the ability to physically deliver goods and services. And oh, by the way, you know, you have to have the ability to physically help manage the returns of that as well. So end-to-end consumer experience. So when we think about India and the challenges there, you're absolutely right. the infrastructure is not necessarily what it is in many larger countries that have already kind of invested in that infrastructure. All reports that we read, everything that we know, suggests that logistics are going to be the biggest next infrastructure investment that you're going to see. Now, logistics is a big, broad topic, but think about that as the ability to get physical goods and services to the consumer. Now, to answer your question specifically, you know, an Indian investment, just like any emerging country investment, is big, it's complex, it's expensive, you have to know the local market. One of the ways that we suggest merchants really kind of consider penetrating these markets is through a partner, through a local partner that has the logistics, has the infrastructure, if not figured out, understood. And rather than you having to recreate the wheel, leverage some of the experiences that are there.
I would think logistics is also an issue in China, but for a different reason. I know there's been a lot of concern with counterfeit goods coming into the market, and even if the Chinese consumer purchases something, it may not end up getting to them as something that they originally purchased. So, I mean, logistics seems to be one of those strong common denominators in some of these markets, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, there's no question about logistics. And you're actually kind of touching on another couple of key topics that I think are fun. Let's kind of pick on the concept of counterfeit goods and services. What we're seeing as kind of an emerging trend is what I'll call branded manufacturers. Branded manufacturers penetrating these markets. Branded manufacturer is, you know, by definition, a large global brand that is now going direct to consumer rather than only through third-party channels. So, you know, pick on any large, you know, I don't care, electronic manufacturer that's no longer just going through the big box retailers, but is now enabling consumers to buy directly from them on their website. And we see a lot of that in the U.S., no question. But the reason I think it's important is as merchants consider penetrating some of these markets, they absolutely, Karen, have to understand your point that consumers are leery. They want to make sure that they're getting the true good and service that they think they're getting. And branded manufacturers have a tendency to bring more credibility to that transaction.
Interesting. That sounds to me like a topic for another podcast, because I'd love to get more detail on that. It sounds like it has a lot of implications on the economics of commerce in these markets too, but let's set that aside. Let's go to Brazil, because that's yet another market that has some idiosyncrasies associated with it. A consumer that likes to buy, but has a particular preference for paying on installment. I know Boleto seems to be a very popular way of paying. How does the merchant get connected to the consumer in Brazil and offer something like that?
Yeah, so Boleto is clearly a payment method of choice. There's like no question that Boleto is clearly a method of choice. But what we're also seeing is a continued penetration of cards, but cards that are also able to operate in installment methods. Now, many U.S. consumers will think, well, a traditional credit card transaction is basically an installment loan. I can pay it off whenever I want. But the credit cards operate differently in the Brazilian
yep.
environment. And that concept of installments on your credit card is also becoming very, very popular. I can talk quite a bit about the Brazilian market. Let me just kind of give you a couple of quick hits on it. You know, I think the key point to Brazil is understanding and recognizing the complexity of expatriating money and the complexity of the governance structure in country, tax, governance, export, import, rules, regulations by different goods and services. What makes Brazil such a complex environment is that there are so many rules and regulations. That's not a bad thing, but if you're going to try and start penetrating that market, you really have to take time to understand it.
Well, I think you have to take time to understand all of these markets, and that to me, if I'm a merchant, my head is spinning. Because I want to serve these consumers who obviously now have access to me because of their phones and access to the internet. But, you know, the complexities within each of these markets individually is daunting, collectively overwhelming. How do merchants deal with all of this?
Yeah, you hit it on the head. So let's kind of stick around in Brazil just for another second before we hop back on the plane. You know, I think what we're asking is how do you ensure that you as a merchant are able to compete in this environment? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I suggest that anybody can compete, but competing and competing to win is a very different conversation. So we talk a little bit about investment and just understanding the market, but let's kind of peel the onion a little bit on that. The Brazilian market is really complex from a tax perspective. And I think if you want to conduct commerce or offer your goods and services for sale to the Brazilian population, you got to really understand what that market is all about. So you have tax structure that if you're selling into Brazil, cross-border, delivering your goods and services cross-border into Brazil, you have a tax structure that could impact you 60-70+% in the course of that compensation. I mean, that's real. So yeah, you can compete all day long, but you're competing, you know, uphill against somebody who's on a bike running downhill.
Wow.
The net of that is, in my opinion, you've got to invest in the marketplace. You have to understand what legal structure you need. You have to understand what your compliance structure needs to look like. You have to understand how your operations need to exist and live and breathe in the Brazilian market in order to truly, truly compete. There's no way that you're going to do it. And we've done that a bunch.
So it also sounds like because each of these markets is so very different, really understanding how to adapt what it is a merchant is doing, offering, is really critical. So it really does go beyond the mechanics of just accepting payment and dealing with, you know, the nuts and bolts of logistics. It really does sound, you know, very strategic in terms of deciding how to approach these different markets. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. And these are actually very fun conversations that that we have in the marketplace all the time. There's a lot of conversation about ensuring that you have the right payment methods. Payments, payments, payments. You know, I live and breathe this stuff. I love it. I absolutely agree that you have to have the most pertinent localized payment methods in place. However, if you're putting yourself into the merchant's shoes, it's not just about being able to accept the boleto. It's being able to conduct commerce end to end, front to back, the way the consumer expects it. So yeah, I'd love to talk more and more about the need for specific payment methods. But I think unless you consider all aspects of the commerce experience, payment methods are not the only thing you need to bring to the table.
Yeah, no, it sounds that way. So maybe we could wrap up by getting some of your words of wisdom about what are some of the things that need to be considered, to use your words, to compete to win in these markets. You mentioned earlier on, you know, it's acting global, but really delivering local, regardless of where the activity is taking place. You talked about logistics, but I'm wondering whether there are a couple of key points that you can leave us with that really do help ground the conversations about what it takes to win.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think we can probably put it into a couple of different buckets. Absolutely need to understand how consumers like to pay. And that's a broad category. It's broader than just which card do they like to use or which wallet do they like to use. It's how they want to use. And that's where some of your mobile technology is going to come into play. That's where the process of accepting payment methods is going to come into play. So not just which ones you're using, but how you do it. It does revolve around the payment capability. You cannot close a commerce conversation without executing the payment.
Mm-hmm.
So those of us in the payment space, got to lead with that. However, you're absolutely right. When you talk about bringing the end-to-end e-commerce experience together, you really truly have to understand the market dynamics. Here's how we think about it. Start with understanding the governance. Again, that's the tax structure, that's the regional rules, regulations, the import, the export. You have to understand what the governance is before you even want to start, because that could be a very, very significant investment for you. And then, as you figured out how consumers like to pay, what the governance structure is in the market, then you can start to break down the logistical headaches. And again, what we tend to fall back is there are partners available in many, many of these markets. You don't have to reinvent that wheel. Leverage those partners for things that you as a payment company or you as a merchant don't do as well delivering goods and physical services in markets that are very foreign to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you continue to mature in that marketplace, you can continue to build and develop your own logistical capabilities, but it could be a huge barrier to entry unless you leverage a partner.
It sounds like good advice. Don't go it alone. There are a lot of pitfalls and things that can go wrong. I think that's very good advice. Well, I have to say that this was a fun trip around the world. I don't even feel jet lagged, Rick. I hope you don't.
No, I'm actually feeling okay.
I know. It was pretty good. I think if jet travel were only this easy, I'd do it more.
I couldn't agree more. No layovers and no delays.
It was excellent. It was a real pleasure to get your view on some of the most promising markets for cross-border commerce that exist today. Look forward to catching up with you again. Thanks again.
Thank you, Karen. Appreciate your time.